friends, and welcome back to Ghouls Night In, the spooky chat show with your best ghoul friends. I'm Penny Snark.
And I'm Midge Munster. And Penny, you know that old saying, April showers bring carnivorous flowers? That's it, right? That's the saying?
Yeah, that's the one that I heard.
Yeah, same. Well, regardless of what time of year they show up, they have been here for a very long time. In fact, nearly a century before Seymour took the stage with his beloved Audrey II, stories of man-eating plants have emerged from all over the world. But while these stories have definitely intrigued us for years, there has never been any such plant discovered that is man-eating, per se.
Yes.
So what is it about botanical horror that continues to terrify audiences today? Well, we are going to talk about it right here on Ghouls Night In.
Yes, I am so excited about this. I definitely remember being a kid and being like absolutely obsessed with Venus flytraps.
Love that. Well, in preparation for this episode, I found two great articles on Atlas Obscura. What Stories of Scary Plants and Other Botanical Horrors Say About Us by Kate Golombewski. And The Mythical Man-Eating Plants That Paved the Way for Little Shop of Horrors by Sarah Laskow.
Ooh, I definitely thought you were going to say, to prepare for this episode, I watched Little Shop of Horrors.
No, but probably later. That'll come at a different time. We have to just pause here and give a shout out to the fact that Jinx Monsoon is starring as Audrey in Little Shop.
I'm so excited.
I would really like to go see that. That is so exciting.
Oh my gosh. Hopefully they release some good clips.
Yeah, maybe. What is that? I take my theater kid card away. Broadway HD or whatever. Maybe we'll get a release of it. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. We are here to talk about
real plants.
Real plants. And so we'll start by looking at real carnivorous plants. So while, like I said, there's no man-eating flora that we know of, there are, of course, several plants that eat smaller organisms. Now, plants, as a rule, need nitrogen to survive. And in places where soil is lacking nutrients, these plants have evolved to get that nutrient from small creatures that they catch. There are over 600 species of plants that have evolved to consume insects and other living objects. There are at least five different kind of genus groups independently that have developed these strategies, which is a lot of plants, really.
It's pretty
exciting. I think probably the one we're all most familiar with, as Penny mentioned already, is the Venus flytrap. I think when we think carnivorous plants, that's where everybody's mind goes.
Yeah, kind of the poster child.
Yeah, he's the OG. But there are lots of others, including butterwort, which I had not heard of, and the pitcher plant, which is aptly named. Pitcher plants have buds that look like a pitcher. They round at the bottom, kind of vase shaped, and inside they contain an acidic solution, an enzyme that slowly digests any insects.
Enzyme got the insects.
There it is. That's what it was. But it helps them digest insects that they trap. But because their pitchers cannot expel waste, we have debris in there, so we can pretty clearly study what they are able to consume because we have exoskeletons and things like that remaining behind from bugs. What is interesting is that pitcher plants can get pretty large. So some larger pitcher plants, there have been remains to suggest that they have consumed things as large as rats.
Yikes.
But an animal of that size is a big old meal for a plant. They went to the Golden Corral and they loaded up at the buffet. They don't need to eat for quite a while after that. So if a rat is an overwhelming meal for a plant this size, then a human is pretty much out of the question.
Yeah.
Maybe if you dropped a toe in there or something, but definitely not a full being. So then why have these plants been made the center of so many scary stories? At a first glance, obviously plants seem kind of like unlikely candidates for horror monsters. They're typically symbolic. We talked about this in one of our flower episodes, I think, about the symbol of life and growth.
Yes.
Several people have talked about the fact that therein kind of lies the potential for true horror, because the plant is the threat that no one suspects.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, there are poisonous plants that do pose a real threat to humans. One of the earliest examples of botanical horror was a Nathaniel Hawthorne story in 1844, which, if you're not familiar with Mr. Hawthorne, he was a resident of Salem and has a very fancy and supposedly haunted hotel named after him there now. But he wrote the story Rappaccini's Daughter, in which a woman who is tending to her scientist father's garden of poisonous plants becomes poisonous herself to the people around her.
Oh my God. I watched a Vincent Price movie.
Oh,
is this part of the thing?
I actually haven't seen that one.
I did not realize that there was I think it was in like, I'll have to look it up to send it to you. It was in like an anthology kind of thing, but it was a movie where Vincent Price was an evil scientist and his daughter was poisonous. And I was like, this shit is wild.
This shit is wild.
This shit is so wild. I did not realize that it was based on a book.
Hold on. Now I'm having to give it a Goog because I'm curious.
Yeah, it was like one of those like 1960s pretending that we're like Renaissance times movies.
Oh, excellent. I need you to know that I tried to type Rappaccini's Daughter. And it was like Vincent Price, Raccoon Daughter. It just brought up a picture of Vincent Price holding her.
Well, there you go.
So anyway, that's enough Google for today.
All right. It's in Twice Told Tales from 1963. Okay. I Googled the much more reasonable Vincent Price Poison Daughter, and it told me what it is.
Well, there you go. Oh,
so I do recommend it. It's very ridiculous.
Well, that's awesome. I was not expecting to see a picture of Vincent Price holding a raccoon today. So honestly, it can only go downhill from here. Anyway, stories of man-eating plants specifically, not just poisonous plants, start really flourishing in the 1880s. Now, generally, these stories would feature a European adventurer of sorts, or a scientist, going to an unfamiliar place and being encountered with a plant that they were unfamiliar with, where they would subsequently witness the plant being carnivorous when, you know, a local or someone on their expedition or what have you stumbled into the grasp of the spooky plant. These stories were also pretty much exclusively told from like a secondhand point of view. So it was a lot of like, my uncle's brother went to.
Right. Would, oh my God. My so dad, many but... stories in that period are just like, I heard a gentleman once told me. And I'm like, guys, just tell your own story.
They can't. speaking of Phil Robinson, he couldn't. In 1881, he wrote Under the Punkah Tree, where the author tells of his uncle going on an expedition and finding a tree with great waxen flowers and great honey drops of fruit and leaves that close like tiny hands. And he watches a local boy chase a deer into the thicket of the tree and gets consumed by it. We also see J.W. Buell's 1889 Sea and Land. That includes stories from travelers, wink wink, some unbeknownst to us traveler who encounter a plant with a thick trunk and giant spines that squeezes the blood out of its victim's bodies. One of the probably most popular killer plant stories that some of you might be familiar with if you ever read this in school or anything is H.G. Wells' The Flowering of the Strange Orchid from 1894. I think I'm trying to remember if I read this in school or if I definitely had a collection of H.G. Wells stories as a kid. But anywho's, this is about a guy named, great name incoming, Winter Wedderburn.
Very good.
Yeah. Who is a, honestly, this is definitely a precursor, for Little Shop. He's an amateur orchid collector, and there is a story that comes to his attention about a man who visits the Andaman Islands in India and tries to collect this species of orchid. But during the expedition, the gentleman is killed and gets he's found all crushed up with this orchid in his torso, and all the blood is drained from his body. And the people who find him attribute it to jungle leeches. But of course, it's not jungle leeches.
It was not the jungle leeches.
It wasn't leeches at all. So Wedderburn ends up acquiring said flower and takes it home to his hothouse greenhouse thing. And during its time there, it starts growing roots outside of aerial roots that are not bound to anything, that are tentacles. And it grows these very potent smelling flowers that draw him in to sniff and knock him unconscious. And his housekeeper finds him wrapped up in the plant's roots, being sucked of all of his blood by the leech roots. They have little suckers. Yeah. Now, as far as horror stories go, this one's pretty tame. Like I said, his housekeeper finds him and she's able to pull him free, and she destroys the plant. But the story, I had to include this part. This story got really popular because, surprise, surprise, during the Victorian era when it was written, there was something happening called orchid delirium.
Ooh.
Which was a term that was being used to describe the Victorian flower madness that was happening, specifically where collecting and discovering new types of orchids was concerned.
Yeah, sure.
So wealthy orchid fanatics were sending explorers all over the world to collect all different types of orchids. And man, those Victorians, y'all so crazy.
People still get crazy over orchids. I read The Orchid Thief and shit's wild.
Is this a piece of nonfiction?
Nonfiction novel about the crazy underground need for orchids, and specifically about a man who job is sneaking into protected areas of the Everglades to illicitly harvest orchids there.
What?
Yeah.
People are insane.
It's true.
I was gifted an orchid by my uncle's girlfriend a few months ago, and I killed it instantly. I can't imagine being I gotta get these orchids.
Right. I gotta get the fanciest, most delicate orchid.
The most expensive plant I can find so that I can therefore kill it moments later. But yeah, so again, tales of explorers discovering new types of plants in the wild. But there was one that was kind of the most gruesome man-eating plant tale, and it was one of the only ones that came to us as an apparent first-hand account. And it was, there's going to be a lot of air quotes happening in this next section, so see if you can hear them in my voice. These letters were discovered the letters are from a prominent botanist by the name of Carl Lech to his colleague, another great name, Dr. Omelius Ferdowski.
Ooh.
But these letters are published in the New York World, newspaper, in 1874 as truth.
Mm-hmm.
And describing an encounter that that Mr. Lech had with a man-eating tree in Madagascar. So in this letter, he describes a tree that looks like the base of a pineapple with large spiky leaves coming from the top that resemble like an aloe vera leaf or an agave, like with kind of spines mm-hmm. on them, and big white tendrils coming out of the middle of the leaves. And he claims to have witnessed a woman from a tribe of indigenous people being sent to drink from this sweet liquid that is kind of pooled at the top of the plant. And as she does so, the tendrils grab her, the leaves close in, and a mix of the plant juice and her blood come seeping down the trunk of the plant.
Ew. Yeah, very nasty.
And of course, because it was 1874 and it was published by a paper, for a time, it really wasn't clear whether these stories were true or not. And it wasn't for 14 years that they, until they found and debunked this as fiction.
Like, I don't think that happened.
They're like, you know what? Actually, that doesn't seem right. But despite that, the story refuses to die. It became one of the most enduring hoaxes of the 19th century, and people, even into the 20th century, were sending explorers to look for the man-eating tree in Madagascar. So, what is it? what is it about these stories that draw us in? Well, we got a couple things here. Now, Penny, you're a smart ghoul.
Thank you.
You may be noticing a theme rearing its ugly head here. Can you guess what that is?
Is it weird racism?
That's right. It's colonialism. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got it. We keep seeing this repeat theme of Europeans going into Eastern cultures to seek some kind of plant life and take a plant that isn't theirs to take and then getting got by it. But there is also this subtext of the plants becoming a scapegoat of sorts for these writers to project their own phobias about the indigenous cultures mm-hmm. in these, quote, new regions.
Yeah. Uncivilized and dangerous.
Savage terrain. That's something that kept coming up in a lot of these.
Yeah.
Like, the terrain was darkened. Like, okay, we get it.
some more of those air quotes on terrain.
Right. And this continues to be a way that plants are used to reflect into the 20th century. We see more villainous plants, but they start mirroring different societal fears as we move forward. During the Red Scare, we start seeing a lot of stories like The Day of the Triffids and Invasion of the Body Snatchers, films that start featuring a monstrance plant life, either from outer space or that's been engineered by big, scary Soviet scientists. Much like all horror, reflecting something true, right? True fears in the fear du jour, if you will. So now, in recent decades, the way that we're seeing botanical horror is it started giving way to humans' fears about the environment. In films like 2008, The Happening, or 2006, The Ruins, we see plant life attempting to take back over, take over humans, take them out, reclaim the earth. And I mean, yeah, it's obvious why this is happening. These newer eco horrors are reflecting our own truth and suspicion that, like, in spite of Western civilization becoming increasingly separate from the natural world, nature is still very much in control. And anytime you've seen a natural disaster, you understand how powerful nature is, and we are not immune to it. And it's, you know, it's a similar reason why doomsday films are so popular. They personify our guilt about what we've done to the earth and put that at the forefront, and confront all of our very real fear that what if we've gone too far to save it. And honestly, sadly, at this point, it's not a what if.
Yeah.
So it is interesting to me, at least, because it's not unreasonable to suppose that if these carnivorous plants evolved due to lack of what they needed in their environments, isn't it possible that if we continue to strip away natural resources from everything in our environment, that plants may continue to evolve to consume what they need to survive? Maybe. Will Maybe. We see a plant eat a human in our lifetime? Maybe.
We'll have to see.
We'll have to see. So let us know what you think. Do you think plants are going to take over the earth? I think it. You know what? If they do, we deserve it.
Yeah. Give them a go.
Give plants. You guys have a run at it. We've been at it for a long time and we're not doing so well.
Not so hot.
But yeah, this was just an interesting little subgenre of horror that I wanted to touch on today. If this is something y'all found interesting, there are a gajillion little areas of sub-horror I would love to tap into here on the pod at some point. So please let us know what you think. You can always do that by leaving us a rating or a review wherever you listen to our podcast. You can leave us reviews on Apple Podcasts. You can leave comments on Spotify, or you can always send us an Instagram DM if you're not able to leave those where you listen. But I believe Penny has an Apple review to share with us today.
I sure do. This 5-star review comes from CC6745, titled Year Round Spooky Fun. Absolutely love this podcast. Penny and Midge are such a delight to listen to, and I get so excited for new episodes. Even though it's spring now, these ghouls take me right back to fall with all its coziness and spookiness. And we've got a leaf and jack-o'-lantern emoji.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff.
Yes. I love when we can bring some spookiness into the new seasons. Like, spring is the perfect time to talk about spooky plants. I love it, Mitch.
Right? That's, I was like, I gotta talk about plants. One thing.
Yes.
We can do in the spring. Talk about some spooky plants. Well, if you would like to see some pictures of spooky plants or just catch up with us, you can follow the podcast over on Instagram at Ghouls Night In Pod. Or if you'd like to connect with me before I get devoured by a plant, you can find me across the web at Midge Munster.
And if you are looking for me, I am at Penny Snark.
And until next time.
Goodbye.